Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. With me in studio today is best-selling author, poet, and teacher Mark Nepo. With over a million copies sold, Mark has moved and inspired readers and seekers all over the world with his number one New York bestseller, New York Times bestseller, The Book of Awakening. He's published over 22 books, recorded 15 audio projects, won numerous awards, and continues to devote his time to teaching, giving lectures, leading retreats, writing, and supporting so many of us on our own spiritual journeys and how we can find our true voice in this world. So welcome, Mark, to the show. It's my honor to have you here with me today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a joy to be with you. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so 2020 has a celebrating mark on January 1st, the 20th anniversary edition of your number one New York Times bestseller, The Book of Awakening, was published with a new foreword by Jamie Lee Curtis. And just to start out, how do you feel?
Oh my God, it's astonishing. I mean, it's I don't know where the 20 years went. It doesn't seem possible. It's 20 years. I remember,
amazing,
you know, retrieving. I like to say retrieving books rather than, you know, authoring them. And I remember retrieving that so well. And of course, you know, I like anyone, I grow so much for that inquiry. I feel like each book is an inquiry, and the words are just the trail of that inquiry.
Like the quest, the question, and the quest. When you're writing,
you're
on a quest. Yeah, yeah. So we're here to talk about voice today, and the poet Naomi Shihab Nye, she's quoted to have said that you have a frank and astonishing voice, and Elizabeth Lesser, the co-founder of the Amiga Institute, said that you come from a tradition of truth-seeking, wild-hearted poets, which I love. Poets like Rumi, Walt Whitman, Emily Dickinson, Mary Oliver. And so I wanted to start in a very, very easy place. It takes you back to your childhood. When do you remember the first poems coming? Were you running barefoot in the grass? Or when do you remember your voice? You know, your voice being this...
First let me say how grateful and humbled I am by those kind comments by Naomi and Elizabeth. I think before I even knew what to call it, I've always, when I was alone, even as a little kid, and I didn't grow up rurally, I grew up outside of New York City in suburban, you know, middle-class Long Island. And so, you know, running through into little patches of nature and little mini parks and woods that weren't, maybe lots that weren't developed yet. But whenever I would venture, you know, on my own, I never felt like I was alone. I felt like I was in the company of a vastness that I didn't even know what to call. And so I always felt at home in that vastness. And I always felt that, you know, the world has all, and life has always spoken to me through metaphor. It's not something I was taught. It's just the way I've always listened and heard. So, you know, and then that would translate into my voice. You know, if you pluck a string and then the string has a note, it's like life would pluck me and it would come out through my voice and words. But I would be seeing, you know, if even as a boy, if the wind through the trees, it would be saying somehow to me without words, pay attention, this is like what? What is this like? Pay attention. And then in trying and often in the beginning, I think like anyone, I was trying to keep the wonder in view just a little while longer. You know, I would see a moment, even as a boy, like, you know, oh my God, look at the light on that water. And then the clouds would come and it would go, and I'd scribble down and go, wait, it's, you're going too soon. I didn't get it, you know? I think it was always an effort to be in conversation. And then, you know, when I was in high school and you know, archetypally, the first woman I ever fell in love with, I had a wonderful journey, and then she dumped me and broke my heart, which is inevitable. And, you know, I wasn't a loner, but I didn't have really close friends till I got to college. So I began to write by trying to heal and understand what is this ache inside, you know, what is this all about? And I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't just talking to myself. I had deepened and extended a conversation with the universe. And I don't think I've ever stopped.
I mean, and you help others in your, not only through your writing, and when we read your words, we can, you know, we are touched and they resonate with us. Otherwise, of course, we wouldn't have them. It's a crazy idea, right? Your book has been in my kitchen, in my lap, and in the subway. I mean, I carry you with me as I read your words. I mean, it's a very profound thing how a voice can travel across oceans into people's homes. I find this really pretty amazing. And you really connect and help connect us back to these tender, resilient hearts that you're talking about when you're talking about also using writing as a tool to heal. Is that what you talk about when you speak about the endless practice, that we have this ability to use writing and conversation and speaking as a way to get closer to ourselves?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, even opening it up, you know, further, I think, and this is in the book Drinking from the River of Light, it's really the central inquiry is that, you know, below are trying to create artifacts that are meaningful and beautiful in whatever form it may be, and even broadening what we consider an art form, I've come to really believe, and I think, you know, earlier in my, you know, from my work, I'm a long-term cancer survivor, and, you know, having almost died in my 30s, really turned me upside down and inside out and really deepened this whole expressive journey for me. And I've come to understand that for me, at least, and I don't have any answers, I'm just, you know, we're just comparing all notes, we all are, but I feel that we all need a personal form of expression. We have to have one. So the way that the, you know, like we're in this conversation and we must inhale and exhale. We can't say, oh, for this hour, we'll just inhale. We can't do that. And the heart too must inhale and exhale. And I think the way the heart inhales is by perceiving and feeling. And it exhales by expressing. And it doesn't matter whether that expression, you know, it doesn't matter if I sing in perfect pitch, I love you, or if I cough, I love you. You know, what matters is that I express it. And we are created for the wholehearted engagement of expression and creativity and voice. And so whether, you know, you could be devoted to being a car mechanic, taking engines apart and putting them back together. You could be you know, a locksmith or a stamp collector or a gardener, you know, or you could be, and it doesn't matter. You know, we strive for excellence, but I think it's really our wholehearted participation in expression that enlivens us and transforms us and touches, you know, across such distances and depths.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think that that is very true. And you also talk about understanding that what's in the way is the way. And I think that's just a beautiful thought, whether it's that love affair that didn't go well, whether it's the cancer, whether it's the financial ruin, whether it's the death, whether it's the university degree that we didn't manage, what's in the way is the way.
Yeah, and I think this is a deep paradox and truth that all the traditions speak about differently, you know, but it's really a very, very common, deep, deep teacher that, you know, we all feel like, oh, gee, you know, if I could just get past, once this is over, then, no, what's in the way is the way. And I think, you know, I love in the Hindu tradition, you know, the deity Ganesh or Ganesha, which is the provider and remover of obstacles. And that's different in the Western traditions. You know, in the Judeo-Christian traditions, we seek saints and sages to help when we're in trouble, to get us out of trouble. But in the Hindu tradition, I love that Ganesh is the provider and remover of obstacles, which tells us that obstacles are teachers, like it or not. And we have to stay engaged with what's in the way until we learn what we're supposed to learn, or our perception is cleansed and we realize it's how we were looking that was the problem. And, you know, Ganesh is often, always portrayed, you know, as an elephant with four arms. And I'm in my study here in Michigan, and I'm surrounded by Ganeshes. And I didn't realize it, but, you know, I love what they look like. And everywhere I go, you know, if I see one, like, oh, that, and then I wind up buying it. And, you know, a few years ago, my wife, Susan, came in while I was working one day and said, oh, I see you're collecting Ganeshes. And I looked at her and I said, I guess I am, or they're collecting me. I'm not sure. but one of the things that is a beautiful story about Ganesh himself, and that is that many sculptures will portray that one of his tusks is broken and in one of his four hands. And the story is that Ganesh, the god of obstacles, ran into an obstacle and was so upset and that he got angry, he broke his own tusk off and threw it at the moon. And the moon caught it and spit it back at him. And so Ganesh carries that broken tusk as a reminder that even the god of obstacles is not exempt from obstacles.
I didn't realize that. So do you think if we pursue the obstacles, we can actually be liberated or set free? There's something in it? Or should we quit that stubbornness and just, like you said, look for a different way of perceiving it? I mean, sometimes...
I think in my experience, and again, just you know, what I share are examples, not instructions. And I think until we're engaged, we just don't know. We don't know if it's an obstacle that's a teacher. We don't know if it's our perception that's in the way. And sometimes, you know, there's just the friction of the wheel of life. Not, you know, I can't force everything to be a teacher. Sometimes, you know, I trip and I fall down because I tripped and fell down, and I just got to get up. And, you know, I love that medieval monks in Europe, when asked how they practiced their faith, would say by falling down and getting up. And I love that. You know, I think that's I think that I've come to believe that life has been made just difficult enough that we need each other to ensure the journey of love.
Yeah. It's kind of how kids do it, too, if you think about it, right? We all started that way, just falling down and getting back up. I'm always amazed when I watch little toddlers just how many times they fall and fall and fall, longing to run, just or longing to stand.
Yeah, I remember one of my early kind of aha moments. I was like in high school, like, you know, a freshman or sophomore in high school, and I was running around, maybe even a little younger, maybe seventh or eighth grade, but running at play, you know, at recess, and you know, somebody tripped me, you know, one of the meaner kids tripped me, and I went, you know, fell and skid and scraped up my knee and my, and all of that. But while I, and, you know, I was upset, and, but before having fallen, it was the first time in my life that I ever, like, hugged the earth. It was the first time I was actually flat on the earth. Mm. And all of a sudden, all the upset and everything vanished, because, and I stayed there because the wonder was, oh my God, this thing that even as a little boy I've taken for granted that I run on and walk on, and now all of a sudden I'm feeling the entire surface of the earth, though I didn't have the language for it then. I was just stunned into another level of perception, feeling the voice of the earth through my little body.
It caught you, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, right? You didn't fall into some abyss and disappear into nowhere land. I mean, the earth got
right.
you. The earth held you. Beautiful. We're going to take a small break and be back very quickly with Mark Nepo.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kara Johnstad, and you're back at Voice Rising. And with me in studio today is a best-selling author, poet, philosopher, and so much more, Mark Nepo. And Mark, I was going to ask you, the world has never been more connected, and yet people have never felt so lonely. We feel anxious about being, we feel anxious about finding our place in the world. And you talk about the absence of belonging as a great silent wound of our time. Can you share with us a little bit more about why so many of us feel as if we don't belong in this world?
Well, I think, and again, I'm a part of this time we're in, feeling it, struggling with it, and so I can only report like the rest of us. But, one of my books, a couple of books ago, was a book that took me 13 years to surface, and that was a book on called More Together Than Alone, on community. Mm. And I was looking for just simply stories and lessons throughout history and across cultures of moments when we've worked well together. And so, I come to where we are living today with a full, and not to minimize the difficulty of it, but to say that we've been here before, mm-hmm. that it is the challenge of our incarnation. It's our turn. That and throughout history, it appears there have been great swells in the ocean of time, long periods when we've joined and come together, and long periods when we've pushed each other away. And I think that it's exacerbated in our modern world by technology, and the side effects, if you will. And it's and let me say, technology is a tool. There's nothing inherently wrong with it, and it's inert. It does not have values. But if we don't meet the outer world with an inner world, we don't have to have answers, but just be on that quest of living fully and exploring and holding nothing back and being present. If we don't meet outer with inner, existence will crush us, not because it's evil or dark, but because it's like spiritual physics. It's the way water will fill any hole. So we need to meet life with our soul, with our voice, with our life's energy. And when we don't, then technology, let's say, its characteristics will fill us will become our default values, and we all, and one of the things that all the traditions speak about is that things that matter still take time. And if we are always and demand that we be where we are and do one thing at a time wholeheartedly. And so when we're split focused, when we're in more places than we are at once, when we are always, and this feeds this sense, there's a common modern thing about fear of missing out. Well, this is our modern iteration of it. But ever since the beginning of time, human beings have struggled with the menacing assumption that life is other than where we are. It's not. And all the beautiful, and all the beautiful life-sustaining, essential, unnameable moments that heal us, that open us, that awaken us, they all open to the same moment. One of the beautiful paradoxes, humbling for me at this point in my life, I'm in my late 60s, and I'm blessed to travel and be with people, so I literally travel all over, and when I get there, my job is to affirm for people that there's nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a privilege to do it. And of course, we surfacely travel distance, but when we are together in earnest, wholeheartedly, it all opens to the same eternal moment. And so why, you know, are we lonely? You know, Rilke, the great, you know, Austrian poet, one of his great lines is, "I am alone, but not alone enough to make every moment holy."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think, you know, one of the things I'm so believe in, you know, I believe in grace and effort. And I believe in effort because I never know when grace is going to show up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so one of the things that I was interviewed last summer by a wonderful young woman in London, and she was sharing, very much asking that, you know, this, she said, in my generation, there's an epidemic of loneliness here. And, you know, and you know, what I was moved to share is, which I learned from my cancer journey, you don't interview ambulance drivers. You take the first one that comes along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm lonely, I have to put down all my preferences. You know, that, you know, we isolate ourselves by stacking up the preferences. Well, I really would like to meet someone, a friend, or hopefully a significant other, or someone meaningful. But, you know, if they don't really fit these criteria, how can I possibly meet them or talk to them? And then we wonder why we're lonely. And if we're lonely, then we go out of the house, however awkward it is. And you go to a cafe and you say hello, even if someone goes, "What are you looking at?" Because you don't interview ambulance drivers.
Talk to us about the importance of vulnerability. I mean, it seems if we walk into that cafe, we don't know anybody and we say hello, okay? I mean, why is this so important for expression, for connection, for this feeling of belonging, and for also our own growth when we, you know, it's often that only when we say hello and hear our own voice do we also, are we able to then get the reflection we need to continue to grow. So what is that mystical moment that where we put down all our protection and relax into the true essence? Why is that so important?
Well, it's essential, and I think you really hit on something that's extremely crucial, and that is, you know, on the one hand, you know, I want to reach out so we can have connection, authentic connection and belonging, and on the other hand, very much what you were suggesting, I need to voice myself to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And the reward for voicing ourselves in integrity, and the word integrity, the word integral literally means to make whole. So to voice myself integrally, to be authentic and vulnerable is one of the admission tickets to experiencing oneness. So whether you receive me or not, I will be received by the universe. And that connection will sustain me and help me grow. And so, you know, a wildflower doesn't wait for an audience to bloom. And so we have these, being human beings, we have these twin, amazing, mysterious, holy connections. One is the authority of our own being, which only has authority because it's connected when authentic to all being. And so that's the way, you know, this is what I understand as the twin forces of presence and meaning. You know, when, you know, I need to renew through authentic being and voice and not holding back my direct experience of life. Now, that's through presence, and through presence I recover again and again how rare it is to be here at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I trip, bring the garbage out, and forget about it. And that's when I got to, like, fall down, get up. And so we're always remembering or returning. But if I'm only limited to my direct experience of life, there's so much more than me. And so the paradox, you know, if I'm only limited to that, oh boy, then I become stubborn and insulated and biased and rigid. So one of the beautiful inlets of presence is that now I can experience your presence. And when we have presence to presence, now we have meaning. Now we have meaning. This is what Martin Buber, the great philosopher, with his articulation, his description of what he called I vow. Mm-hmm. And what he suggested I vow was just what we're talking about. He defined it as the unrehearsed dialogue, between two living centers brings God into view. So when you're present and I'm present, now we have meaning. And so, you know, so on the one hand, there's always a shadow, the shadow or the liability of relying on my own direct experience only is that I become insulated and myopic. But the shadow of relationship is that as hard as it is for me to earn my vision, if you say you won't love me, then I'm ready to throw it away. No, don't go anywhere. No, I didn't mean it. It took me all these years to arrive at this truth. But if you're not going to love me, forget it. I'll throw it away.
You would like the fact that I live on the corner of Martin Buber Straße in Berlin.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And across from the park is where Kafka spent his last days, and a 10-minute ride is where Rilke penned his poems, and in this rich city.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's so, and I mean, Martin Buber, he wrote, right, the world is not comprehensible, but it is embraceable. And
yes.
It's just how to touch things into being, right, how to see with the eyes of a child.
And this is why, you know, expression and voice is so important, because it's through inhabiting our being in the world that we experience life. And this is a big difference traditionally in Western learning and Eastern learning, is that in the West, we have slipped over centuries into our mind. And so we think the goal of wisdom is to understand life. But in indigenous traditions and in the East, the goal of wisdom is to experience life. You know, there's a wonderful little parable that a master is always a master and apprentice, and the master sends his apprentice to he wants him to go and sit by the river until he's heard and listened to all the river has to teach. And he's a very serious student, and he goes, he sits, he spends the whole first day just deciding where's the best place to sit. And finally, he sits under a willow tree, and he has his special cushion and his little cloth, and he sits, and he goes into deep, earnest meditation for 3 days. And at the end of 3 days, he has a terrific headache. And just as he's opening his eyes, really feeling achy and terrible, right in front of him, out of nowhere, a little monkey comes along and jumps in the water, and hooting and yapping, and it cracks him, and he starts to cry. And so he gathers his things, he goes back to his master, and he tells him what happened. His master puts his arm around him and lovingly says, "Ah, the monkey heard. You just listened."
Mm.
Because
that's
the
profound.
The goal is to get wet. We can learn by watching, but this is the difference between curiosity and wonder. the way watching will lead us to join in, curiosity will lead us to wonder. Because understanding can lead us to experience. And this goes back to, let's go back to technology for a minute, because this is one of the reasons that we're lonely and isolated and struggling. And that is, you know, with the wonders today of technology, I can get on right here, right in my little study, I can get on the internet and I can bring up videos of someone, you know, at Victoria Falls, or I can witness, you know, the peak of the Himalayas or Mount Everest. And on the one hand, that's wonderful because I may never get to actually go there during my lifetime because you can't do everything. But on the other hand, as wonderful as that is, it is not a substitute for the journey.
Yeah.
There's something different that's transforming when I make the climb to the top of that mountain, whatever it might be, versus seeing a snapshot or a video. And I think that one of the things that makes us lonely and enervated of soul in our modern world is we start to take the snapshot for the climb. So, you know, I think this happens, you know, with the last 25 years, the reality TV culture. You know, and I'm not criticizing any particular program, but any of these things, you know, American Idol or, you know, The Voice or all of these things, you know, Who's Got Talent. So, you know, we sit at home and I watch that and I even vote. And so I have all the illusion of participating, of connection, of relationship, and I expend all my energy, and then the show's over, I turn it off, and I'm still alone and lonely, except now I'm drained. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and we're supporting this idea of competition and not connection, right? So we ourselves
yes.
are not singing. We're not singing. We're not around the bonfire. We don't have our, as Rumi would say, take down your instrument. You know, we're not participating in the singing part, but we are participating in the I'm going to give my vote and create this competitiveness, which is actually makes us even feel more lonely. It makes us feel more lonely. Okay, we're
yes,
going to take a small
yes.
break, and we're going to be back with Mark Nepo.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Cara Johnstad. You're back at Voice Rising, and I'm here in studio with Mark Nepo. Mark, I love these lines of yours, and they remind me of why we are so important to each other. You have said, if I dare to hear you, I will feel you like the sun and grow in your direction. So that, as a singer, those are beautiful lines, I think.
No, thank you.
We can only hope that the people that we open to and really share those tender hearts with will have that capacity for deep listening, right? So that we can grow more together than apart.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, this is so important, and it's very much, you know, Thomas Merton said that if we truly beheld each other, we would fall down and worship each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, so much comes from what I, you know, we all know the phrase love at first sight, which I believe can happen. But what's more important, I feel, is love at first true seeing. And that's more to what we're speaking about, that, you know, I can be in pain, preoccupied, worried, have a lot of noise in my mind, and you are vulnerable and ready, and our timing isn't right. But if we stay in relationship, there's a good chance that I will be open when you are open. And now, you know, this is how we can work together in an office, let's say, for 10 years, and we get along, and it's fine. But one day after your father has died and you're open like you've never been open and you're back to work, and one day when I'm coming along and I'm just softened because I now have arthritis, let's say, and now all of a sudden we pass and we see each other and I look at you and I really see you for the first time, and now I go, oh my God, I didn't realize it was you. Oh. And when we can, you know, no one, because we're human, again, we fall down, we get up, we, you know, I'm clear, then I'm confused, I'm safe, then I'm afraid. This is the human journey. This is what it is to be a spirit in a body and time on earth. So we have to be devoted to help each other in this practice of return. And because I don't see you, not to always say it's you. This goes back to the Ganesh thing. Maybe my perception is clouded. And so, you know, I remember I was traveling on the California coast, and in that beautiful around Monterey, there's these beautiful, you know, this US-1 goes down. And the first time I was driving down there, and really profound for me, there was one of these big kind of stone islands, like a half mile off the shore. It was a rough sea that day. And on top of it, there wasn't a single space not covered by a form of wildlife. There were seals and coromants and pelicans and just all kinds of birds. And they were all just like, and the water was splashing up on them. And they were all just resting, literally like laying near and on top of each other. And I stood there. It must have been a half hour, 40 minutes, because I felt like this was a teaching. And what I finally received was, normally they would be territorial, but they were exhausted of their differences. And when they were exhausted of their differences, they truly, there was room enough for everybody. And this is what we are struggling with in our modern world. We are not yet exhausted of our differences, and there is room for everyone.
Yeah, it's a beautiful metaphor when you think of all the things that are happening, especially in many, many countries around the world. It's a beautiful metaphor to think that if we let go of all these differences, of course appreciate people for the diversity that we are, but then also see the uniqueness and that potential that we have to come together. It's powerful, powerful stuff. Mark, I've been told that it's possible to even dive into these things deeper, not only on interviews and with lectures, but that you are going to be leading in Kalamazoo, Michigan, this series of new classes, and that one can actually sit in the same room with you and study and explore those questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how is that? How does one go about that? Or how is it? Is it a weekend or is it a series of classes?
Well, there's a series. So in addition to my travel, I do here where I live. I also want to be able to journey with a small group of people over time. So these classes, which you can go to my website at marknepo.com or a sister website, threeintentions.com, spelled out as one word. And right at the top, there's a link and a video and a link to a page that has all the details. But I'm offering in 2020, at the start of the new decade, a year-long journey where no more than 30 people go, the same group comes together 4 weekends over a year, around a journey that I design. I also, in July, there is another format where no more than 30 people will come together for a deep dive for 6 days together. And next August will be a weekend, kind of an intro threshold journey to get acquainted and just kind of get our souls and hearts and feet wet, if you will. And so there are still some spots left. And I welcome. It really is a very intimate journey, which is why I like to keep it a small number.
It's an amazing opportunity. You also have. I think you just. I don't know how you do this. All these travels and all this writing. You had a book release, I believe, in September, Drinking from the River of Light. You have another book release. Of course, you have the 20th edition that just came out now in January. And you have another book release called The Book of Soul, 52 Paths of Living with What... No, Living What Matters, which is coming out in May. And as far as I understood, this it explores our struggle to inhabit the soul on Earth, this messy human life that we've been talking a little bit about today. I want to ask, when we talk about, not lonely, but aloneness and community. What is your practice? How do you balance that solitude that you need to listen to that true inner voice and have that time to ask those questions and not be content with a quick answer from a search engine, but to really sit with it? You were talking about 13 years. You were writing the one book on community, and at the same time the beauty of connection and of community. How do you keep that balance for yourself that you don't get distracted too many people? And
it is a balance for I just like anybody else, I sometimes trip out of balance and then have to come back in. But I'm wonderfully in a rhythm where right now, these months, like December, January, and February, I'm home mostly. And then the rest of the year, I'm traveling quite a bit. And so I really do this kind of deep dive for myself in these months. And then I take portions of it with me when I travel. And so I'm in this rhythm. And here's another metaphor that's very helpful for all of us, because we all have to make this do this balance. And that's the teaching of whales and dolphins, because whales and dolphins, and we take this for granted, these mammoth creatures, they're air breathing creatures that live in water. I mean, this is really a miracle. And no matter how, because they're so massive, no matter how long they can stay under compared to us, they have to break surface or they will die. And no matter how much the exhilaration of breaching, that they call it, when a whale breaches surface, they can't stay there either. They have to if they're out of water too long, if their being is not immersed in the deep, they will die. And this is a wonderful teaching because this is part of the journey of being a human being on Earth, is that we have to, we no matter how much we love the deep, we can't stay down there or we'll die. We must reach into the world and into the world of others. And no matter how much we're in the world of others, if we stay there, we need to be immersed in the deep so our heart can breathe. And so the question is not if we will do this. Every being on Earth will do this. The question is, what is your balanced rhythm for you? And of course, it can change. So, you know, a question for our listeners is to examine that today for yourself. Which are you needing? Are you spending too much time in the deep or too much time in the world? Do you need to balance it? Do you need to be immersed more in the deep to renew your being? Or do you need to be more in relationship to renew your connection? And so the rhythm of our solitude and community is where health resides. And everyone's got to do it, just like, you know, a whale and a dolphin can't say, no, I forget it. I'm not going to break surface or I'll never, I'm not, I don't want to go. I'm tired of going in the deep. No, too bad.
Do you have certain, well, I'm assuming this is an assumption that you do have certain times of the day then that you breach and dive deep, that you have a practice, maybe a writing practice or a meditative practice during the day. Do you also have like a cyclical practice? I know artists that say these months I'm going to research, or these months I'm diving deep into writing and I actually don't want any appointments. I just want to be, you know,
well,
other,
I've learned
other months I'm performing. So do you have certain times that you really go out in the lights?
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, like right now, like this time, you know, December, January, February is when it's not hard and fast, you know, but this is when I'm home where I'm deeply diving and, you know, I'll be with family and friends and it's not hard and fast. Like I did have, 2 weeks ago, I was in Santa Barbara doing a retreat for a weekend, but, you know, I'm careful that, you know, that was an exception. And then the rest of the year, I'm really out in breaching in the world. But in the daily sense, what I'm doing all the time is I'm a morning person. I'm up early. And so I'm very it's all about noon at least. I'm deep in the world of listening. And you know, when I was a younger artist, I was like anyone, I was like insecure, would I ever finish a book? So I was really concerned, like, am I gonna really make ground and, you know, will I write or not? Will it come? Will it not? But obviously, you know, it's really about being present and receiving. So, you know, whether words come or not, I'm in that space. Mm-hmm. Some days lots of words come, some days not very many words, but it's really about being in that space. Then when it gets to about noon or so, then I consciously go out in the world, do errands, be with people. And then I like, if I can, wind up in like a cafe setting later in the day. And then at night, I'm just hanging out with my wife, Susan, who's a potter, and our dog, Zuzu, who's sleeping right next to me now.
Wonderful. I mean, some dogs are really silent and some dogs start snoring in the middle of it also. Yeah, so if there's one golden nugget that you could say, I mean, you have so much wealth and wisdom that you've acquired on your many journeys, but about the voice, if you have one little golden nugget that you would love everybody to know about maybe tapping into their true voice or finding their authentic voice, what would that be?
Yeah, you know, I would say that for me, and again for me, I feel deeply, my experience has been that our heart is the tuning fork of the sacred. And when I can be present and hold nothing back, then that's when the heart is struck against the world. And then I hear the invisible symphonies and visible symphonies and audible symphony. So I would just encourage everyone to dive and breach and hold nothing back. Hold nothing back and listen.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I thank you, Mark, for being on the show today. For those of you that want to dive deeper and get to know more about his work, his books are everywhere, but you can go to Mark Nepo, MarkNepo.com. And then I believe it's also 3intentions.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious, but I'm not going to ask that now. Three intentions. And you are amazing with all your books. And like I say, the fun thing about voice is that your voice that you, when you put pen to paper, it literally travels around the world and everyone gets to share in that journey. So we thank you, Mark. And thanks for being on the show.
Oh, well, thank you so much for letting me be a part of your good work, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.